The topic of today's shiur is Makom HaPatish. And of course, that's an appropriate way to end the series. We thought we were ending the series last time, but it wasn't yet the Makom HaPatish. So, of course, this is the appropriate method to end the whole series. The first thing to note, of course, is that Makom HaPatish appears in the Mishnah of the 39 Avos Malacha in the end. The first of this series, we began to discuss the topic of Hotzah, and then I noted that the actual last item in the list of the Mishnah is Amotzim Rishus L'Rishus. And I tried to suggest that that might be very significant, even though something has to be the last item. But the fact that Amotzim Rishus L'Rishus comes after Makom HaPatish is surely significant, because the natural last item on the list, one would think, would be Makom HaPatish, because as the Gemara explains, and we'll get to it in just a minute, we normally define Makom HaPatish as the Gemar Malacha. One would think that the concept of Gemar would also be a fitting ending to the Malacha, so the fact that Hotzah appears after Makom HaPatish, Eino Omer Ella Darsheni, that requires some understanding, some clarification, and then we went on to try to explain that the concept of Hotzah as a Malacha Grua really sets it apart, and that according to some perspectives, it may even be derived from a different Parsha in the Torah, and therefore it is unique. What's important about that for our topic today is that in some respect, if we accept the analysis of the first year, so Makom HaPatish, in one respect at least, really is the last of the Malachos, or the last of the Malachos derived from L'Sasa Kol Malacha, in any case. And then, of course, the methodological question rises again, namely, something has to be last, and this is the natural last because it is Gemar Malacha. Is the significance of it being last limited to that alone, or is there anything beyond that? In other words, like I was suggesting about Hotzah, is it possible that Makom HaPatish is its last, or the end of the list, because not only is it the last one, but it is unique, it's different, it stands out, in many respects. How does it stand out? Unlike any of the other Malachos, Makom HaPatish is presented in the Mishnah just as a Tzura without a Tachlis, but its real status is exactly the opposite. It's really a Tachlis Bli Tzura. What I mean by that is as follows. In most Malachos, you have two elements. You have the form of the Malacha, as it was originally done in the Mishkan, for example. In other words, what does it look like from the outside? What is our perception of the Malacha? What kind of an action is it? In this case, Makom HaPatish, banging with a hammer. What exactly you're banging on is one of the issues that we'll get to in a minute. But the banging with the hammer is the Tzuras HaMalacha. But obviously far more important than the Tzura is the Tachlis, the objective of the Malacha. What is it that really determines that this is a malacha? What characterizes it as the kind of creative or constructive activity which makes it usur on Shabbos? To use the felicitous phrase of the Bali Tosis in another context, when the Bali Tosis want to explain the concept of malach shein tzricha legufa, so they say that we look to the Mishkan not only to determine what the malacha looks like, but also to define the nature or the character of the malacha. Ikaro v'sharasho. We want to know the essence of the Malacha. What is it that makes it asur? So if we were to ask ourselves about Makom HaPatish, unlike all the other Malachos in the Mishnah, where we have a Tzura and a pretty clear Tachlis as well, that we know what it looks like, but we also, based on what it looks like, it's quite clear what it accomplishes. Now, starting from the beginning, Zareah, Choresh, Kotzer, we know what planting looks like, and we also basically have a sense what the objective of planting is. And the same with plowing, and the same with gathering, and the same with reaping, and the same with building, and so on and so forth. It's clear not only what they look like, but what their basic objective is. We might need to fine-tune some of the details to figure out how far that objective goes, and so on and so forth. But when it comes to Makom HaPatish in the Mishnah, we're basically presented with a tzura without a tachlis. All we know is Makom HaPatish, a man hits with a hammer. What does it accomplish? What is its objective? That is lacking. In that sense, it stands out. The irony is that when we look further into the matter, what really emerges is that the tsura, which is the only thing that identifies it in the Mishnah, is completely insignificant. And whatever the tachlis is the only thing that is significant about it. So on the one hand, it's presented without any reference to its objective whatsoever. And at the same time, it's perfectly clear that the only thing that can qualify it as a malacha is its objective, certainly not its tzura. Because it's clear that, in the cases of the Gemara, it becomes even clearer, that one can substitute this tzura for many others. You make a hole in a lul, in a chicken coop. Tsar tzura, according to many Rishonim. We'll get to some of the cases in a minute. You draw something, the finishing touches on some workmanship that you do, nothing to do with taking a hammer and banging on anything. So immediately we're struck by the discrepancy between the presentation of the Mishnah and the actual significance of the Malacha. And undoubtedly that's not coincidental. Clearly the presentation and the discrepancy with what it really is reflects the fact that Makad HaPatish is unique. It's all about an objective, but even the objective is one which is difficult to pin down. Okay. And therefore, the fact that it is at the end, although not the last, of the 39 Avos Melacha, is undoubtedly no coincidence either. Probably the Mishnah is telling us this is something that that stands out. Maybe it's the climax of all the Melachos, or maybe it's simply set apart from the other Melachos. It's hard to say. If indeed Makad HaPatish is significant, mostly because of its unstated objective, we still have to examine whether or not the act itself doesn't achieve some sort of stature by virtue of the fact that it accomplishes that objective. In other words, it's one thing to say that the original tzura is not so significant, whether it's using a hammer to bang in a nail or whatever it is. It's quite something else to say that this is a malacha which only has a tachlis and no tzura. That's one of the issues that we want to investigate. Every other malacha, every other av malacha, has a tzura and a tachlis. In the case of Makad HaPatish, is it possible that all we have is a tachlis? And that would be very important for several issues. Number one, it's important to try to determine whether or not Makad HaPatish has any toldos. Every other malacha has toldos, clearly. In the pasuk that we read in this week's parsha in Vayikra, Me'achas Mehena, so the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, and then later on again in Habona, the Gemara says that from this pasuk we derive that there is a concept of toldos. The Marie Katz in Shidduch Kubetzes in Bava Kama raises the question why it is that, for example, in Nezikin, it's not necessary to have a pasuk to teach you that that there are toldos. Right? The Gemara has a discussion there in the beginning of Bava Kama, whether or not the Avos Nezikin told the same Kiyotzebahem or Lav Kiyotzebahem, whether the Toldos of the Avos, when it comes to Nezek, are similar to them or not. And the Gemara concludes, told the same Kiyotzebahem, without quoting one single Pasuk. And yet, when it comes to Shabbos, there's the Avos Malacha, and then we learn from Exeris HaKasuv that there are Toldos as well. And the question is, why? So the Mari Katz explains, because the in the case of Avos Malacha of Shabbos, the Mishkan plays a very central role. And one might have thought that only the Avos, which are in the Mishkan, they and they alone are Chayiv B'Malacha. Therefore, it's necessary to have Exeris HaKasuv to teach you that not only those 39 categories or cases, but that we can extend to the concept of Toldos. When we talked about Hotzah, In the first year, I mentioned that there's one version of Rabbeinu Tam that where it said, the Rajba quotes Rabbeinu Tam as saying that in Hotzah, if it had not been for the fact that, for example, the Torah itself maybe reveals that Hachnasa, which is normally viewed as a tolda of Hotzah, is Asur, one would have thought that there are no toldos for Hotzah, because Hotzah is a malacha grua. In other words, basically, when it comes to Avos Toldos, when it comes to rather the Avos Malacha, the other 38, let's say, there's Exeris HaKasuv that teaches us that there are toldos. When it comes to Hotzah, which is unique, we're not sure. Had it not been for some other limud, perhaps wouldn't have been toldos. Perhaps we can raise this question with regard to Makaveh Patish as well. Are there toldos of Makaveh Patish? Why? Number one, if it's a mechudash malacha, if it's something that is really unique and different and doesn't qualify according to normal norms of the malacha, then all bets may be off. What applies to other malachos may not necessarily apply to Makaveh Patish. But it also may be true that even substantively, we should look at avos and toldos in Makaveh Patish differently than other malachos. Because what is a tolda? Generally, it's understood that a tolda is the tachlis hamalacha without its tzura. That's any mishkan, the 39 basic categories exist. They were done in a certain manner. And we extrapolate from there that, you know, not only that exact case, but the concepts that underlie, they're important as well. The objective of that performance creates a tolda. But if all there is the objective and not the tzura, then one might argue that the normal concept of av and tolda doesn't apply. In the case of hotzah, if there's no tolda, we might say that tolda is pater. In the case of Makaveh Patish, if there are no toldos, we might say that every tolda, or what we would call a tolda, is the exact equivalent of the av. There's no difference between an av and a tolda because the tzura doesn't matter. Either way, for opposite reasons, we would have a different relationship between avos and toldos and Makaveh Patish than any other malachos. That, for example, the Gemara notes that according to the Chachamim, when you do an av and a tolda together in one state of ignorance, behalom echad, so you only chayv achas. Tolda b'makom av, you only bring a single karban. If you do bonen, megabein, if you do zoreya and zomer and mashke zroim and mavrich and so on, if you do all the variations of zoreya, you do it in one state of ignorance, you didn't know any of those halachos, you bring a single karban. Told the b'mokamav, you bring a single karban. That's the view of the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer happens to disagree, but that's the view of the Chachamim. So the famous Rashi in Bava Kama, Rashi explains that the reason that we only have a single karban, no matter how many violations of the same type you do, the Halam Echad, is because you bring a karban for the Av and not for the Tolda. That's how Rashi says it. Other Rishonim disagree. They say that the reason that you bring a single karban is because basically you're involved in repeat violations. If I do Zareya, put in seeds, and then Noteya, I take an existing plant or whatever, and I replant it. Mashka, I water the grass, and so on. The reason that I bring a single karban is because I've done essentially the same thing three times. I've done Zareya, Zareya, Zareya. But that's what Rashi says. Rashi says it differently. Rashi says the reason that you are patur is because you are only chay for an av and not for a tolda. In other words, whenever you do something that is ikar and tafel together, you're chay for the ikar, you're patur for the tafel. That's Rashi's view. So taking the same issue and applying it to Makaveh Patish, what would be the halacha? Let's say you do Makaveh Patish, and then you do a tolda of Makaveh Patish, assuming that there is such a thing as a tolda of Makaveh Patish. So it's possible to argue that in the other malachos, there is a discrepancy between the av and the tolda. Because in the av, you have the tzuras ha-malacha and the tachlis, the way it was done, and that is significant. And in the case of the tolda, all you have is the tachlis ha-malacha. So you have the ikar, and you have the tafel. You do the ikar and the tafel together, you're chayy for one, you're not chayy for the other. According to Rashi's understanding in Bava Kama. However, when it comes to Makaveh Patish, if we were to argue that the tzura has no significance whatsoever, we never care about the way that you accomplish Makaveh Patish. It's always the objective and nothing but the objective. If that's the case, then if you were to do Makaveh Patish and its tolda b'vasachas, according to that perspective, it would be conceivable that you would be chayiv more than once, because there is no ikar and tafel. Unless you also thought that it was covered by the other rule, namely it's like doing kotzer, v'kotzer, v'kotzer, v'kotzer. It's like you're doing the same action repeatedly. In other words, the relationship of avos and toldos in Makaveh Patish as opposed to other malachos is going to be different. From the perspective of ikar v'tafel, there would be more reason to be mechayev you. From the perspective of the similarity of what you're doing as opposed to the independent nature of the different actions that you're doing, it would actually be more similar. So there would be a reason to make you more chayev, there would be a reason to make you more pater. But the point is that a certain perspective of makom patish would leave you with a very different perspective. Another issue. There is a debate whether or not malacha shena tzricha legufa is chayev or pater. I mentioned this before, machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that malacha shena tzricha legufa is chayev. Let's say you find a body at your doorstep on Shabbos morning, and you decide you want to transport it somewhere else. That's called the malacha shena tzricha legufa. You'd rather the body not be at your door. Your primary interest in transporting it is not because you want it to be at its destination, it's because you don't want it to be where you are. That's called malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. So Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayiv, Rabbi Shimon says you're pater. The Rambam paskins that malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is chayiv. Okay. What is malacha she'ena tzricha legufa? So many Rishonim explain it is a situation where you have intention to do the malacha, but you really are not interested in its objective. You want to do the action, but you're not interested in the purpose. Right? You want to get rid of the body, so you want to do a hotzah, but you're not interested in the normal purpose associated with hotzah, which is to bring the object to the place of its destination. You're really interested in getting rid of it. You're not interested in getting it to the funeral parlor. Okay. So the Achronim point out, if you ever have a malacha, right, which is defined by its tachlis, it's defined by its objective, then the issue of malacha shein tzricha legufa, chayev or pator, might be different than the standard debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. In other words, if you have a maisa malacha, right, which you consider to be of stature and significance, and in addition, that maisa has a purpose, has a function. So then he said there are two components in every malacha. There's the action, and then there is the objective. And in the case of Ein Tzricha Legufa, you've done the action, even though you've ignored the objective, and that's a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. But if you have a malacha where we don't really care so much about the action is just a function of the purpose, all the action is the implementation of the objective. We don't really care about the tzura. We care only about the tachlis. So then it's quite possible that even Rabbi Yehuda, who says that malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is chayiv, will agree that it's patur, because the only thing that establishes the stature and importance of this activity is the objective, and the interest in the objective is lacking here. This, for example, is the reason, according to some explanations, the Ran suggests that even though there is a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about avos malacha, whether tzricha legufa, ein tzricha legufa is pater or chayev, when it comes to a tolda, malacha she'ena tzricha legufa is going to be pater, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because a tolda is defined by the objective, not by the action. And since the objective is undertaken, in this case, without interest in the objective, so even Rabbi Yehuda will agree, malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, in that case, will be pater. Now, what happens if you have an av malacha, which is defined only by its objective? So in theory, you might have the exact same consequence. So, for example, we're talking about makom patish. If makom patish is important only because of what it accomplishes, and not because of the action per se, so if I accomplish makom patish without tzarich legufa, then essentially I'm really not interested in makom patish, not only as a result, but as an action, because its status as an action is only due to the goal that it accomplishes, the objective that it achieves. So if I strip the kavana from that objective, it could be there's nothing left. So if I take the view that makom patish is unique, and it doesn't have status as a maisa, it only has status as a goal, not only might I say that the tolda of makom patish is different than other toldos, either l'kula or l'chumra, I might also end up saying that malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, which is chayiv, let's say, in other malachos, might be patur, specifically when it comes to makah b'patish. This could be used to explain, if it's true, part of the famous Shitas HaRamba. The Rambam paskins that malacha she'ein etzricha legufa is chayiv. That's the Rambam's view. Most Rishonim paskin malacha she'ein etzricha legufa is patur. So, for example, if you were to extinguish a nair, right, the light. So according to most Rishonim, unless you are interested in creating a pecham, creating a gacheles, creating a an instrument to use with the coals, so that's malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. Because it's basically, you're interested in saving oil, saving the wick. You're not really interested in the action in its own right. Mechabe, unless it's l'shem, pecham, asiyas pecham, according to Mandomar, says malacha she'ein etzricha legufa, is patur. The Rambam paskins that mechabe is chayiv. Because the Rambam says malacha she'ein etzricha legufa is chayiv. He paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. However, there are some very prominent exceptions to that rule. One of the most famous ones is Mapis Mursa. The Rambam in Perek Yud, Hilchos Shabbos, Halacha Yud Zayin, says, HaMapis Shchin B'Shabbos, if a person opens up a wound on Shabbos so that it can drain, K'dei L'Harchit Pi Amaka, to widen the opening, K'der Sharofin Osin, very interesting that the Rambam emphasizes that, as doctors do, Shehein miskavnim berefua laharchiv pi amaka, right? They, some doctors in the crowd, they want to drain the pus from the wound. Hare zechayiv mishum makin apatish, shezuhi malachas harofe, v'mifiso lahotzi menu aleicha shaba, if he's interested in opening it up because that will, also provide air and that'll speed the healing process, he's chayiv. If he only is interested in draining the infection, areza mutter. Ram says you're mutter. So all the Rishonim, Achronim attack the Rambam. They say, listen, everybody else paskins that mapis mursa lahotzias aleicha, that draining the wound alone is patur, because they all paskin that malacha she'ein etzricha legufa is patur. But the Rambam paskins in Perek Aleph Hilchos Shabbos that Malacha She'ein Etzricha Legufa is Chayiv. He should have paskin that Matis Mursa, even for the purpose of draining the pus, should be Chayiv. And yet he says, Mutter, Mishum Tzara, that goes down from a Drabanan to a Mutter, but how did it get to the Drabanan to begin with, according to the Rambam? So various explanations that are given. But some of the Nosa Kalim noticed that there were two anomalies in this Rambam. One anomaly is it appears to be an exception to the Rambam's rule that Malacha She'ein Etzricha Legufa is Chayiv, and here it's Patur. The second anomaly is that the Rambam describes Mapis Mursa as Makah B'Patish. If you look at most of Rishonim, and of Kuf Zayin, in Shabbos, most of them say that Mapis Mursa is Boneh. It's considered Boneh. Rashi has two views. Either it's because you're creating an opening. It's a Pesach. Asiyas Pesach. Rashi has two views. Rashi isn't sure. It's Boneh or it's Makah B'Patish. But the predominant view in the Rishonim is that Mapis Mursa is Boneh. So some of the notes that Kalim point out, is it a coincidence that the Rambam's exception to his normal psak of Malacha She'ein Etzricha Legufa Chayiv takes place in a context which he also thinks is not Boneh, like most Rishonim, but Makah B'Patish? In other words, perhaps in Makah B'Patish, the Rambam believes that Malacha She'ein Etzricha Legufa is Patur. Why? If we take the view that Makah B'Patish is focused on the objective and not on the action, because that's what it is. It's a purely objective-driven Malacha. So here we might say that even the Rambam will agree. Because Ein Tzricha Legufa ends up undermining the malacha, not just the tachlis ha-malacha, because the tachlis ha-malacha is the malacha. This might explain Shitas HaRamba. Okay, let's move back, though, for a moment to investigate whether this is so or not. Let's backtrack just a little bit. The first thing to note is that Makah B'Patish is described in the Gemara, again, in terms of its objective, in a very specific way. Gemara here on Daf Ayin Hei Amud Beis, commenting on Makom Patish of the Mishnah, explains. Rabba Rav Zera Damer Chavayu, Kol Midi Di Ispe Gemar Malacha Chayv Mishum Makom Patish. What is the objective or tachlis hamalacha of Makom Patish? Gemar Malacha. You can see that that's very vague, right? If you talk about the nature of bone, or zareya, or ofer, or kosev, right? Has a very specific function to create communication. We spoke about kosev, bone, to create a structure, zareya, stimulating growth. What is makom patish? Gemar malacha. It's already clear that it's secondary, or it serves, it's accessory to other processes. The classic makom patish is actually associated with bona. Almost every case of makom patish in the Babli, certainly, is associated with malacha's bona. The question is whether that is just coincidental or not. The truth is that the Uraim seems to believe that it is not coincidental, but it is actually part of the shame malacha of Makom Patish. The Uraim explains, She'ena nikra Makom Patish ela bedavar she'ena mechusar binyan. She'akos ha-patish la'achar gmar binyan. V'la'omar rab mishum bona, lo'omar she'esh chayiv bona bedavar, ve'en stira binyan bekelim, lo'omar binyan mishum bona la'asira mitam Makom Patish. She'hu la'achar binyan, she'la'olam b'chisorin binyan lo'tiyam malachas Makom Patish. Pirish bekotzer, Mishim bona, ein bo, ela tambona, umeosa bona, ein chayev de ein binyan bekelim. The Uraim says something very, very important. He notes that Makom Patish classically is always in a context of bona. You're building something, Makom Patish. The last smash with the hammer that completes the process, that's bona. This idea, Uraim says, is not coincidental. But what it does establish is a kind of a dialectical relationship between bona and makom patish. On the one hand, makom patish is at the completion of bona. That gives it a very specific meaning and purpose. If one were to take the Uraim to a certain extreme, one might even say that our analysis of makom patish until now is not correct. And raising the possibility that Makom Patish is unique, that it's tachlis oriented, it almost doesn't have its surah, that might affect its tolda, that might affect Malach Shein Tzricha Legufa, that might explain its placement in the Mishnah. That's what I've been suggesting so far to accent the singular nature of Makom Patish. According to the Uraim, it's possible this is not true. Makom Patish is just the end of Bona. In other words, basically there are two malachos for Bona. There's Bona, the beginning, and the middle, and up to the end. The end of Bona is called Makom Patish. If that's true, so basically, number one, Makom Patish may be limited to Bona. Number two, it does have a very specific tzura, if that's what the Uraim really has in mind. Again, it's the end of Bona. But number three, and this is the tricky part, that's where the dialectical relationship comes into play, the number three is that you can't rush Makom Patish. Makom Patish only exists when Bona ends. What the Uraim says is actually very big chiddush. The Uraim is relating to the problem of Yesh or Ein Binyan Bekelim. Gemara discusses in a few places whether or not Bona is limited to creating a structure, or it even means, or even applies, to Kelim. It's something which is immobile, not connected to the ground. Can you talk about Bona in the context of Kelim? What the Uraim says is, even if Ein Binyan Bekelim, meaning legally, the concept of Malachas Bona doesn't apply to Kelim, but the fact that it's considered a stage of Bona, even though halachically you're not chayiv because of Ein Binyan Bekelim, is enough to preclude Makom Patish. Makom Patish means the end of the Bona process. So as long as you're involved in a bona process, even if you're not chayev mishum bona, says the Uraim, it can't be makom patish. Because Makom Patish is the after Bona, or the end of Bona, or the finishing touches of Bona. It's hard to know how to even define it. So according to the Reim, Makom Patish has a very specific meaning. The Reim also has a view. Yeah, sorry. Both. Right, I'm saying both. That's what I mean by the dialectical relationship. Makom Patish is the end of a bona process, and because of that, it also precludes Makom Patish until that right moment. You can't jump the gun with Makom Patish, and it is defined as the end of bona. It sounds like you could. You could have bona without Makom Patish, but you can't have Makom Patish without bona. And I say, even when you're not chayev mishum bona, the stages of bona still preclude Makom Patish. It's not a halachic overlap that's impossible on the chiyuv level, it's on the definitional level. But that's so. This is not the mainstream view, but this is the view of the array. What about what? Right. Well, I guess that would still be, I think that they would still be open, perhaps, to Makom Patish. It's not clear. It's possible. It's not so clear. I'll give you one example, since you raised the question, it helps me in the next point I wanted to raise. The Reim has a very famous shita about something else. I mentioned before about Mechabe. I mentioned that, you know, when you create a Pecham, when you create a Gacheles, and you're going to use it, so that, everybody agrees, that's Mechabe in the Torah, even according to Rav Shimon, the Paschus Melach Shein Tzricha Lugufa is Patur. When you create a Pecham, that's a Melacha, Doraisa. Okay. Actually, the Gemara has two cases that seem to be Doraisa, Bein L'Rav Yehuda, Bein L'Rav Shimon. One is creating a Pecham, a Gacheles, a Kol, and the other one is called Hivhuv HaPsila. If you singe, I think that's right, translation, if you singe the wick. In other words, you extinguish the flame because that improves the quality, whatever it is, of the wick going forward. That's called Hivhuv HaPsila. The Reim happens to have a unique shita about Mechabe. He thinks that Mechabe is limited, according to the Psak of Rav Shimon, is limited to Asiyas Pechav. What about Hivhuv HaPsila? The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda admits that that too is Chayiv. So he says that is Mishum Makom Patish. That's Hivhuv HaPsila. So how does that fit into this whole discussion? I think it's exactly what you just said. In a way, Hivhuv HaPsila is creating a better wick. That's a kind of a tolda of, it's the afterglow, in this case, excuse the pun, right, of the extinguished, of the process of that produces a better wick. That for the Reim is also Makom Patish. But Makom Patish is a function of Bona. Now the truth is in the Babli, Makom Patish always appears in the context of Bona. Just one more second. And there was a question there also. But the fact is that could be interpreted in more than one way. For the Reim obviously means that Makom Patish is part of the process of Bona. One could have said that, you know, Makom Patish is what we described before. It's a Gemar Malacha. But Bona happens to be one of the prime candidates for a process in which there can be a Gemar. Whether the Gemar means the last gasp, the last step, the culmination and the climax, or whether it means, you know, the after the climax, meaning the you know, the post-Malacha, whether it's the final touches that aren't necessary but are, let's say, aesthetic or add some improved dimension, that remains to be seen, what exactly Makom Patish is even in the after. But the point is that it's not coincidental necessarily that it appears in the context of things like Bona, because Bona is a process. There is a Yetzirah in Bona. It's not going to be in some of the other Malachos. But it's not because, per se, it's the end of Bona. And therefore there's no issue, as there is in the Ureim, about Binyan Bekalim and so on. Yeah. Subset, I'm not sure it's the right term, but...
Concluding step.
Right. Concluding step or after step. Yeah.
Put all the examples on.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't say it's because all the examples are in Bona. I'm supporting his comment, which I just read to you, based on the fact that in the Bavli, all the cases happen to be, which we'll see in a moment, cases that either are or that overlap or that appear to overlap in Bona. Because, well, I think I solved that by allusion just a moment ago, where I said that either it's the culmination, in which case we look at Bona more as a process, and Makom Patish as the culmination. I think more likely, Bona stands on its own, and Makom Patish represents either an aesthetic or in some cases a functional, not necessity though, but they adding a dimension, another dimension to the. Well, according to the Urayim, it still might be. It's
that's
the after.
Saying,
right, what I just said now, after the Urayim was, it could be that there's another reason.
You can solve the problem that it's not Urayim. But Urayim's
knows what it is. There's Bona which is indispensable. And then there's the Bona, which is the after touches. Yeah, something like that. Aesthetic, cosmetic, however you want to define it. Yeah, so what I said was, for the Urayim, it's quite possible this is a halacha and bona, per se. It's a din and bona. The other way to explain what appears otherwise to be an interesting coincidence, which is that almost Makom Patish always appears in the context of or competing with bona, is to say that bona is just an exemplar of certain types of process, where there is a beginning and an end, or where the aesthetic or even functional final touches are significant attached to a process, and there might be other processes like this as well.
I think what's bothering Mark is that you have to, if you're going to take the Urayim view, you have to define why Bona is special as opposed to making adornment, let's say,
right,
which also is a process oriented,
okay,
producing something that has structure, and utility and aesthetic.
Right.
But if you're going to take
Bona, 100%, you would want to do that if you could. Okay. So basically what we have. Yeah. No, that's his point. The whole point of the Urayim is that even though Ein Binyan Bekalim, as long as it's part of the Binyan process, it's not part of the Makom Patish phase, and therefore you have to wait. On the other hand, he doesn't deny, because that would be, cutting off many Gemaras, that there can be Makom Patish even if there's no Bona. So in a way, it is the end of Bona, but it's independent of Bona. That's what I said about the dialectic. One could have said, well, if Ein Binyan Bekalim, then Ein Makom Patish Bekalim. So it's not subservient to Bona, it's just a different phase after Bona, or so it would appear in the Urayim. Okay, so basically what we've seen so far is as follows. There's one possibility that Makom Patish doesn't belong to any malacha, and it doesn't necessarily belong to a process either. It's simply Makom Patish, it's unique because of the gemar, the objective. If it's objective driven, there may be all sorts of consequences, as we've discussed. Toldos, Lashon Tzvicha L'Gufa. I'll discuss some other things in a minute. Even the Gemar part, I'll come to challenge in a few minutes. The Gemar describes it as Gemar Malacha. Maybe Gemar Malacha isn't precise either. Gemar Malacha maybe covers 80 or 90% of the cases of Makom Patish, but maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's something even more general, which I'll explain in a minute. But that's one that those, however you draw the line or define it specifically, the point is that would be underscoring the uniqueness of Makom Patish as a highly subjective and purpose-driven malacha and so on. Or the other extreme, that is to say that Makom Patish is, they look different, but it really is highly conventional. And what is it? So either the one extreme would be to say it's the afterglow or aftermath of Bona. Again, the completion stage, the after-completion stage, the finishing touches, however you want to define it. That's what its tzura, and that's what its tachlis is, both. It is then connected with the details of Bona, l'kula l'chumra, that's part of the discussion of the Urayim. In between, I'm suggesting, it isn't Bona, necessarily, but it is gemar malacha of a process. Any time you have a malacha with a process, right, you say a Riga might be a process, right? Many things could be a process. It's quite possible that Makom Patish will be a candidate in that kind of circumstance. Would that take it away from being purely objective-driven? I'm not sure. We'll get to that. Okay. Now, just to build up this idea about the relationship to Bona a little bit further, the fact is that this is reflected in a discussion of Rav and Shmuel on the Sugyan Kuf Beis on the base in Shabbos, just to make it clear. In the Mishnah, it's clear Makom Patish is related to Bona, although I should add that in terms of the structure of the Mishnah, on Ayin Gimel, right, and as according to the Urim, if we're to take him seriously, if this is what he really meant, one would have thought that Makom Patish would be connected with Bona in the list. Right? Had there been such a formulation, that would have been, you know, very reinforcing of that view. You have Bona, Makom Patish, and Soser. That's not the way it appears. Right? Fact is that Makom Patish still appears in the end of the list. Okay. Either way, it's just fascinating to note that when the Gemara discusses Makom Patish, debates whether things are or not Makom Patish, invariably in the Bavli, it's always a choice between Bona and Makom Patish. Okay. Mesates, which is chiseling, I guess. Chiseling? Mishum Mai Mechayev, Rav Amar Mishum Bona, Shmuel Amar Mishum Makom Patish. It's a debate between Rav and Shmuel on three cases on Kuf Beis on the base. Chiseling. Osa Nekev Belul Shul Tarnagolim. Let's say you make an opening in the chicken coop so that the smell can exit. So Rav Amar Mishum Bona, Shmuel Amar Mishum Makom Patish. Ayol Sufsa Bekufina Demara, which means, I guess, stabilizing not such an outdoorsman or a, what is it? You have an axe and you, what's it called? The blade, the head, stabilizing that in so that, you know, so that when you smash your wood or whatever it is you do with your wood, that it doesn't go, it doesn't fly off and, you know, you might end up in Galus, you know, the Shogeg. The stake. That's what Rashi explained. You drive a yated through the thing, so that holds it in. That's called ayol sufsa bekufina demara. So Rav says mishum bona, u'shmul amar mishum makom patish. Gemara says utzricha. You need all three cases. Diashmin and kamaisa bahi kama Rav mishum derech binyan bekach. Avol osa nekev belul shel tarnagolim deim derech binyan bekach. So clearly the Gemara is discussing, you know, is this bona? The Gemara isn't discussing so much whether it qualifies as makom patish. You'll note. But whether or not it's bona, and if it's bona, it implies that it's not makom patish. That seems to be the determining factor, which would help the Urim. Although I don't think you have to go as far as the Urim to say this. I'll explain why soon. Eina modele the Shmuel. Viash, I'm sorry. Kuf base on the base. Viash minan baha baha kamarav mishum the dami lebinyan the avde la vira of al sufsu bekufina demara dein derech binyan baka. The Gemara is discussing again. I don't have so much time, so I'm not going to read more than I have to. If you look at this Gemara here, the Gemara is discussing whether or not it is bona or not. And actually, in the continuation of the Gemara also, the Gemara discusses this question. It seems that everything depends on the status of bona. This is also evident in the relationship between Yerushalmi and the Bavli. Yerushalmi has a much wider view of Makom Patish. It's perfectly clear in the Yerushalmi that there are Makom Patish cases that are associated with Ma'amer and with Gozes and with Oreg. Many other cases, not only limited to the Bavli. Moreover, cases that the Bavli determines are bona, in some cases the Yerushalmi establishes are makom patish. Generally, Yerushalmi has a much wider range in terms of makom patish. Minafeach b'klis chuches. It means you're a glazier or whatever it is, you're making glass. So that entails, first you melt down the glass, and then you blow, and if you ever go to any of these fairs or whatever, you know, you blow the glass, right? Did that once? You blow the glass, and then it's supposed to, you know, then you cool it, or whatever it is, however it works. Okay. Minafech means when you're blowing to shape the klif skuches. Oh, we'll get to that. So the Bavli considers, well, maybe. I mean, it is the end of the process. The question is it too central to the process? It's the shape, it's the form of the kli. The kli is made, and I guess the raw materials of the kli are all there, and now it's a question of the shaping of it. Is shaping the end, the after end? It's not the after end. It might be the end. In any case, the Gemara on Ayin Hayomid Beis says that Menapeach Bekli Zchuchis is Chayiv Mishum Makom HaPatish. The Gemara also says Hayman Deshakil Akufei Miglimi, taking off the final, that's also Makom HaPatish. Mesate Sasa Eben, the chiseling, Mishum Makom HaPatish. If you look at these cases in Yerushal, or Tzor Tzura, the Gemara says if you make a design on something, that's Makom HaPatish. I'm sorry. So the Babli has these cases as Makom HaPatish. The Yerushalmi has these cases of bonus. So the Yerushalmi, on the one hand, expands Makom HaPatish to other areas. On the other hand, the Yerushalmi sometimes substitutes bonus, which might be connected, for Makom HaPatish. In other words, the Babli has a clear demarcation. All the cases of Makom HaPatish are in the context of Bona, pretty much. But there's Bona, and then there's Makom HaPatish. And Yerushalmi extends Bona in some of the cases that the Babli considers Makom HaPatish. We find this in the Rishonim as well. There are several debates in the Rishonim where some Rishonim think that a certain Malacha is Makom HaPatish, and others say, no, that's not Makom HaPatish, it's Bona. I already mentioned Mapis Mursa. According to most Rishonim, Mapis Mursa is Bona. Because creating in a person is also considered Binyan Adayad, right? The story of Adam and Chava, that was considered a Binyan. Mapis Mursa is an example of that. Or Mitzadeh Desa'eben. Let's say you have a stone, and you have to move it around in order to make it firm in the ground. That's called Mitzadeh Desa'eben. That's the Gemara in Kuf Beis Amud Beis. The Rambam and Rabbeinu Hananel say that Mitzadeh Desa'eben is Makom HaPatish. Rashi and most Rishonim say that it is Bona. Or you have a Kli Shel Chulios. You have a multi-piece object, assuming that there's no problem with Binyan Bekalim for the moment, and you give it one smash and that holds it all together. So that's also an argument in the Rishonim. Rashi says that's Makom HaPatish. The Bali Tosas and most Rishonim say that is Bona. The point is that the relationship between Bona and Makom HaPatish is both competitive and also complementary. In other words, we find Makom HaPatish in a framework, in a context of Bona. At the same time, there is this struggle to determine whether the act in question is Bona or Makom HaPatish. From the Uraim's point of view, this is perfectly understandable. Because for the Uraim, the question is, when does the process end and when is its gemar, when is the after, what is the finishing touch, and what is simply part of the process itself? That could be a debate within Bona, according to the Uraim. According to other Rishonim, it's possible that the debate revolves around other issues, not only on Bona, but about Makom HaPatish. Well, that's what I just said. I said one way to understand those arguments is that they are an argument about Bona. And that's implied in some parts of the Gemara, except that it implies that you can't have Makom HaPatish as long as you have Bona, like the Uraim. The other possibility is that the issue isn't strictly about Bona, but the argument about Bona is also Machlokas, where Makom HaPatish begins, not only where Bona ends. Okay. Now, as I mentioned, though the Gemara's cases are pretty much Bona, the Rishonim do engage the broader question, can there be Makom HaPatish in other malachos? For example, our last topic was Kosev. We discussed the problem of Hishlim Os Achas. Let's say you have a Sefer, and it's only missing one letter. Right? Normally you have to write two letters in order to be Chayiv Mishum Kosev. If you complete that one letter, what happens? So, simple reading of the Gemara is that the Gemara, when it talks about Hishlim Os Achas, is talking about Kosev. And the Meiri on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis says it explicitly. He says, the only issue at stake is the issue of Kosev. However, Yerushalmi, it's possible to read, certainly Minchas Chinuch suggested this, that Hishlim Os Achas might be Makom HaPatish. Maybe it really isn't Ksiba. Or maybe it's both. We'll get to the issue of both in a minute. Similarly, Rabbeinu Hananel, on Ayin Hay Amud Beis, I'm not going to read it, but Tzor Tzura is one of the cases that the Gemara says is Makah Patish. You draw a design. So the Rebbe Hananel says, that's true if it's only a design. But if there are letters involved, let's say the design is letters, the initials of the person, the craftsman, IR, okay, in fancy, you know, that's his trademark, right? So the is that Tzor Tzura? So Rebbe Hananel says no. Anything that involves letters comes under the rubric of kosev. And if it's kosev, it's not makom patish. That's Rebbe Hananel. So it appears clearly that there is an argument in the Rishonim, maybe paralleling the Babli, the Yerushalmi, whether or not we find makom patish in the context of other malachos. The truth is, however, let me give one another example. We have this with regard to mechatech and memachek as well. I mentioned before that mesates, chiseling, according to the Gemara, may be makom patish. So the Chidush Yaran on Daf Ayin Hamud Beis asks, when you chisel a stone, why isn't it also memachek? You have to smooth it. And why isn't it also mechatech? Mechatech means whenever you cut something to an exact size, a measured cutting. That's called mechatech. According to, you know, predetermined specifications. That's mechatech. So when you're chiseling, there's memachek, mechatech, and makom patish. It's very interesting. So the Ran has two views. One view of the Ran is that's not what we're not talking about that kind of chiseling. It's only aesthetic, and therefore we don't really care about the exact specification, or it's already in the binyan, and there's no memachek, there's no mechatech. That's one view of the Ran. In other words, he goes out of his way to, if there's going to be makom patish, it's going to be only makom patish. It's not going to overlap with or coincide with mechatech or memachek. Inami, says the Ran, the Gemara only said makom patish because it wanted to indicate that makom patish applies in this case. But in Inami, you should be chayv mishum mechatech, memachek, and makom patish. What should be wrong with that? Which brings us to the next point. Until now, we've examined a little bit the interesting relationship between bone and makom patish, and we've raised the question whether in the context of other malachos like kosev and so on, there can be a makom patish for that as well. But a larger question is the question of overlaps in general. Can there be an overlap between makom patish and another malacha? Can you ever say what you're doing now, you're chayv shtayim, achas mishum, like we just said, Mechatech or Memachek, or that would be twice already, and also Mishumaka Mepatish. This is an important question. And the question really relates on two levels. Number one, in general, when it comes to Malachos of Shabbos, how comfortable are we with overlaps? With one action constituting two Malachos. How comfortable are we with that idea? In some of the discussions that we had previously, Ofer, Kosev, this question came up, particularly in Ofer, the relationship between Ofer and Mavir, like baking on the one hand and igniting flame. Seems in many cases you do both at the same time. What about the concept of overlap in malachos? So some Rishonim and some Achronim who have no problem with it at all. No problem at all. Well, there's many Gemaras that seem to talk about overlapping. The Gemara says when you build a chavis, you know, you violate X amount of chatos, and when you build this, you violate that. If you're zomer, the tzarech le'etzim, if you prune and you're also interested in the wood, b'chayiv shtayim, b'achas mishum zareya, b'achas mishum kotzer. There are a number of Gemaras that seem not to have trouble with overlapping. There are others who are really unhappy about it. The Mabit in Kiryat Sefer, for example, is bothered by the whole, he says, I don't understand zomer v'tzarech le'etzim. Chayiv shtayim. It's one action. How could you be chayiv twice? The Gemara says, if you build this, you're chayiv. How many chatos? If you build that, you get... So that's not the same. There, it's a process that involves discrete actions. You do this, you do that. In order to build a chavis, you have to do seven different things. Right? So, of course, you're going to violate seven times. But if you're talking about a single action, right, triggering an overlapping chiyuv, that's a different story. What's the problem? Without going into too much detail, the problem is maybe when you overlap, you dilute or you create a competition, right? The competition takes away from the focus of the malacha. What are you doing now? You have to do, in order for Shabbos to be chayav, you have to be a malacha tzmach Shabbos. I'm sorry? What do you mean? That's an interesting way to look at it. Interesting. Okay. Okay. We'll leave it at that. That needs to be analyzed more. Why two people do? Right. But it's an interesting analog. Okay. So there are some Rishonim, some Akronim who don't mind overlaps at all. The Minchas Chinuch specializes in overlaps. Just read it on any malacha. You'll see. He has five cases in every malacha where he'll tell you, even though the Gemara says this, they don't mean this, they mean this and that, and that, and that, and so on. That's his bread and butter. Others, the Karen Ora, in terms of Achronim, they're not so certain about it. They're much more reserved about it. It's a very fascinating question. It touches, let's say, on this question of competition. There are all sorts of chilukim that could be made. So on that level, Makom Patish and its overlap has to be looked at in the broader context. If you generally have no problem with overlaps, then you're, not going to have as much problem with Makom Patish. We'll see in a minute. If you always have a problem with overlaps, you're going to have problems with Makom Patish as well. I mean, you have one action. Yeah. In other words, in some sense, I'll use the term Ikar and Tafel, although I don't think it's so obvious that it applies. But in other words, you're doing a single action, and the question is to label that action. So some Rishonim and Achronim say you don't have to label it. It's this and it's that, and it's this separately and that separately. But you might have said that, you have to give it a label, and when there are two labels, each one detracts from the other. That seems to be a perspective. However, in light of what we've been discussing about Makom Patish, is it possible that Makom Patish is different with regards to the overlapping question? And here, either Lekula or Lechumra. Meaning, this whole question of competition, let's say, to define a particular action. So that's when you have similar types of malachos, right? And especially when you focus not only on the objective, but on the action. So what kind of tzura are you doing here? A or B? But when it comes to Makom Patish, because it basically is lacking a tzura as a malacha, it's a much more flexible malacha. It's almost chameleon-like in a way, meaning it serves a certain function, and that's it. So for Makom Patish to overlap with another malacha doesn't really detract from that malacha. Unless you're talking about something like Bonen Makom Patish, let me make it clear, right? Where from a Uraim point of view, it's just a stira mine obey. You can't have overlap between Bona and Makom Patish if Makom Patish is post Bona, because that just is a contradiction. Right? Or if in general, if you say that, that even if you go beyond Bona, but you say the Gemar of a process, you can't have the process and its Gemar at the same second, possibly, because that's a stira mine obey. But if you can get away from that, then there's no problem of overlap. Maybe there's less of a problem of overlap when it comes to Makom Patish. However, and as I say, the Minchas Chinuch, he loves this. Hishul Moshe Achas is Kosev, and it's Makom Patish, and so on and so forth. However, one could perhaps suggest the opposite as well. Because till now, even if we just take what we've said till now, we could suggest the opposite. But let's take it a step further. Till now, we've said that what may be singular and unique about Makom Patish is precisely the fact that it doesn't really have a tzura. It's a gemar. But let's take it a step further. Is it even really the Gemar? Or is the Gemar just an example of more general concept of chashivas? What I mean by that is as follows. If you look at the Mishnah, Ayin Gimel, Mishnah and Kuf Beis on the base, the Mishnah introduces us to the Shita of Rab Shimon ben Gamliel. Rab Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af ha-makeh bekurnas al hasadon, b'shas malacha chayim ibn eshu kemetakein malacha. that if a person bangs on the on some sort of a kli during his malacha, he's chayv mishum betake malacha. As he's building something, or he's whatever it is, that he doesn't bang the object that he's building. He bangs the wood on the side, or the metal on the side. He's also chayv mishum betake malacha. So the Gemara says, why is that so? Kuf gimel amud aleph. My kavod. Why is he chayv? What did he do? Not building anything. Not completing anything. So the Gemara says, Rabba Rabbi Yosef, Tamri Travayu, Mipnei Shem Amin Es Yado. What he's doing is he's training. He's involved in training. It makes him a more effective craftsman if every once in a while, you know, to measure his stroke, whatever it is. You know, it's like, you know, I guess when you're on the batting box there and you take a few swings, you know, to make sure that you know, got your timing or whatever it is. It's a timing thing. It helps his proficiency, even though it's not in the intrinsic malacha itself. So the Gemara says, Kashuba b'nei rechava, elameyata, chaza menusa b'shabes v'gamar, hachanami de mechayiv. This is just an amazing Gemara. Gemara says, and let's say you watch a workman working on Shabbos, and you learn from him. You pick up a technique. Is that an Isra Malacha? That's a shocking Gemara. Ela bayavarava damit travayu, shekein mirade tase mishkan osin. When the people made the thin sipuyin, you know, covers for the kelim and the mishkan, so what they had to do is, they had to, I guess, the Rashi explains it, makim gimel alatas, they would take three times on the object that they were building or plating. To smooth out the blade, I guess. Shehudak. Bali Madbeya bimekomenu, Rainu Olson Chen, Raji says, the mintners, the people who coin who mint coins in our town, they do that as well. Okay. Tanya Navahi of Shimagamu Afamaka or Kurnas, Alasadam Bishas Malacha Kaiv Shem Rade Tase Mishkan Olson. Rav Shimon Gamliel represents a radical view of Makabah Patish. Basically, number one, it's not Gemar Malacha. There are actually two Girsos in the Mishnah and the Rif, whether it says Apamaka Bakurnas Alasadim Bishas Gemar Malacha, or just our Mishnah says just Bishas Malacha. Even if it's Bishas Gemar Malacha, it's not Gemar Malacha. But Shimon Gamliel's view of Makabah Patish is that it doesn't necessarily require Gemar Malacha. That's number one. Number two, the Havamina was that, you know, if you sit there and you study craftsmen on Shabbos, that you chayiv mishum makabah patish. It's a reductio ad absurdum. The Gemara says, are you going to say that? What meaning? The Gemara originally thought that you're doing a little bit of whatever it is, you know, you're training on the side there, right? You don't just start climbing the rocks, you have to train, so the training is also something. So the Gemara says, are you going to go so far as to say, even if you want, I think the tshuvas of the Chalkas Yaakov, so he says, are you allowed to, study medicine on Shabbos? He said, well, certainly not a malacha. He says, but, you know, this Gemara says that, if you watch, the Gemara said, is that a malacha? So it isn't. But is it at least Asur? Interesting. Anyways, the point is, to what extent when the Gemara decided that it's part of the process of building these very thin covers of the Mishkan, to what extent did the Gemara retreat completely from its original notion? By which I mean, you could say Lamaskana, what the Gemara means is that this is part of the malacha. Even then, it doesn't necessarily qualify as gemar the way we spoke about it earlier. We don't necessarily pass like Rav Shimon Gamliel either. Okay. But that's one possibility. Or, gemar really means that even the maskana, it's preparatory, and it's not part of the intrinsic malacha. Basically, makabah patish emerges as a significant action of Chilul Shabbos that you do on Shabbos, irrespective of whether or not it is part of the actual process of the Malacha. The Rashba on the spot says, Yesh l'farish, two views, Dabai v'rava al rabba v'rav Yosef pligi. The Maskano rejects the Havamina. She'amru de'eno machmas shema'am in yado. Ela she'ken oisa b'mishkan. Behind the Amina and Ela, one view of the Rashba is, this isn't necessarily even Makav Apatish. This is what's done in the Mishkan. Rav Shimon Gamliel said, in the Mishkan, this is how they did when they were Miradeh, the Tassim. Mm-hmm. This is how you do it here too. That completely neutralizes even Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Shekein oisa b'mishkan v'hayda d'armin anela. Avar Rav Haigon pirish, dabai v'rav, l'faresh divrei rav v'rav Yosef asu. De'enu kamo shatah savur d'ma'amin es yada lasas malacha k'amri. He's not just practicing. He's actually doing something that's connected to the process. V'pnei shema'amin es yada l'chavin l'hakos ba'osa malacha atzma shu osa. V'zemecha malacha, that's also considered part of the malacha, but it's extrinsic to it. Kadei sheyase malachta b'tikun, v'ena doma l'nata l'samaga l'iktsar, v'ena kotzer, ela atchala samalacha k'tamrinan. Yerushalmi says that if you start preparing for Harisha or Tchina by getting the instruments ready and so on before you actually do the process, that's makav apatish. So the Rav Haigon, quoted by the Rashba, says, this is the Bavli. Bavli doesn't mention Yerushalmi because this is not that. It's more than that. It's part of the process. Part of the process of building whatever includes the, you know, the straightening out of the patish so that it'll work properly. Hatzkala samalaka ukadamrina. Ubrushalmi makshal had rab shimming amliel. Dominin hasam kasha rab shimming amliel. Nata liktsar velo katsar. Shema klumhu. Amravada asid rab shimming amliel karab yehuda detanya shovit vamakashke shalari gareza chayiv. Gemara says in the fine Hayomid Beis that Rabbi Yehuda added to the malachos something called shoveit umedaknek. This is part of the weaving process. The Gemara says that the Chachamim said that shoveit umedaknek is like mesach v'oreg. It's already included. Rabbi Yehuda felt that there were not 39 avos malacha, there were at least 41. Shoveit umedaknek. Yerushalmi says that shoveit umedaknek, according to the Tanakhama, not like Rabbi Yehuda, is makav apatish. It's not a separate malacha, but it's not like the Bavli either. Areza b'chalal, mesach, the oreg. Rather, it's makav apatish. What emerges from here is the following. According to the Yerushalmi, and according to certainly one understanding of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, makav apatish isn't even the Gemara malacha. Makav apatish is a davar chashuv that you do on Shabbos. Either it contributes to malacha, or is chashuv in its own right. The question is, do we accept the idea of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, albeit in an adjusted, fine-tuned form? We don't pass like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. But the idea that makav apatish, it's not the end of bonah. It may be gemar, but the gemar is just a way of ensuring the stature of the makav apatish. But you don't view the makav apatish as a single, even objective. It's Davar Chashuv Chil Shabbos, which doesn't have any other name of a malacha associated with it. I'll give an example. The Gemara in Psachin, Daf Mem Vav, raises the question whether Muktzah isn't perhaps Doraisa. We pass in the Muktzah, well, Muktzah might be Doraisa. The Gemara considers that Muktzah might be Doraisa as a malacha. The Gemara says maybe you should be Chayiv Skila and Chatas for Muktzah. So Rashi says, and where would it come from? What? Where is it in the 39 of us malacha? Rashi says, Losasa kol malacha. Give another example. So my two examples that I like to bring. Rashi in Beitza has a very famous line, where he says that if you feed truma tmeya to a kelev, it's supposed to be nene from the kilui of truma tmeya. From the destruction of Truma Tmeya. If you do that on Yontif, right, that's a violation of Malacha. Why? What's wrong with feeding a dog Truma Tmeya on Yom Tov? So Rashi says, because it's Achshavei. Because normally the way you are Nene from getting rid of Truma Tmeya is by burning it. And therefore, another way that you get rid of Truma Tmeya, where you derive some benefit from it, is achshavei, it becomes like a satellite of burning. Very strange Rashi. Where does it come from? What's this idea of achshavei in Yom Tov? So I always thought, if you're holding up Shim Megamliel, Makeh B'Patish just means asiyas davar chashuv or asiyas chilul Shabbos. The details are unimportant. Again, the Gemara said, and if you study the guy next door, building the building, I don't mean you glance at him. I mean you study him and you derive something from it. Maybe that's also chilul Shabbos. In other words, Makeh B'Patish, according to one view of Rav Shimon Gamliel, is almost on the border of the Ramban's mitzvah sase of Shabbos. Right? The Ramban's famous mitzvah sase of Shabbos. That even if you violate certain drabbanans on Shabbos, you have destroyed shvisa of the Shabbos. Why? Because even though you didn't do technically any of the 39 avos malacha, your behavior is completely inconsistent with the day of Shabbos. How can it be that, you know, you'll have an Erev, you'll have your stores open, you'll have, you know, business as usual, you won't violate one of the 39 avos malacha, and that's not a violation of the Doraisa? Ramban says, that's not Shabbos. Is it possible that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, in a way, Makeh B'Patish is not the action, it's not even the objective. There is no objective. What it is a Chilul Shabbos, an obvious Chilul Shabbos, without a Tzura, without even a Tachlis. The Tosis Ritz says something similar. The Tosis Ritz says, even if you hold Ein Binyan B'Kalim, he says, is it conceivable that a person is going to build Kalim all day in Shabbos, and that won't be considered Chilul Shabbos? It's just inconceivable. It could be that you end up saying, it's one thing to say that something is a mitzvah say, it's another thing to say that it's an Isser Malacha. Now we paskin against Rav Shimon Gamliel. What I'm asking is, we paskin against Rav Shimon Gamliel because we have a very specific understanding of what Makeh B'Patish is, namely it's Gemar Malacha. It's the end of Bona. It's the end of other processes. The final touches, the aesthetic touches, the final indispensable touches. Or, because of course, we don't pass like Rav Shimon Gamliel exactly, but the concept of Rav Shimon Gamliel, which is that when you do something, which you have to fill in some of the blanks. If it's a Gemar Malacha, if it serves or enhances some other Malacha, that's the kind of Chashivus, which is the final Malacha. There are 38 Malachos with specific Tzuros, and then as Makeh B'Patish, which says that things that serve those 38, by virtue of their status, fact that they contribute to it, that too constitutes Chilul Shabbos. For example, the Rambam, in Perush Mishnah, according to the Kapach edition at least, in Perush Mishnayos in Shabbos, says as follows. This is on Ayin Gimel. Hamakeh B'Patish, v'afilu b'gmar malacha, according to the girsa we have here, not only b'gmar malacha, but even b'gmar malacha, k'derech she'osim hamarakim b'patishim shemakim hakos kalos ma'od liyasher pnei akli, even though he seems to be quoting Rav Shimon Gamliel. And not the Rav Shimon Gamliel of your watching or your training, but the Rav Shimon Gamliel, at least, of Makeh B'Kornas, k'dei liyasher pnei akli, ulahachliko, to smooth it, the koren leplula zu ultratik, I don't know what that is, lefika kol tikun malacha v'gamra, any tikun, not gemar, any tikun or gemar, says the Rambam, kegon ashifa tzichtzuach, kol minei hayipui, any aesthetic enhancement, kulan toldos Makeh B'Patish, hu amaram kol midi di is bei, Gemar Malacha Chayim Mishmakam Patish. According to Rambam in Perush Mishnah, is Gemar Malacha Zlav Dafka. It could be in the middle of it's a filo Gemar Malacha. What is the real point? Yipui Kol Dover Shemahane Esa Malacha. Anything which reinforces, enhances, right, adds a dimension to the Malacha. And fill in the blanks. If this is true, then perhaps we should revisit the question of overlapping. And again, in two directions. On the one hand, we might say that whatever you say about normal overlapping, when it comes to Makeh B'Patish, we should be more liberal, like we said before. Because not only is it different and not competitive in the sense that there's no tzura, there's only a tachlis, even the tachlis turns out to be chameleon-like, meaning It fits in however it fits in, but it's not Gemara per se. It could be Gemara, it could be Tchila. It's interesting, the Rambam mentions later on in the same piece, he says, Shovet umedakte, chachamim omrim, shemalach ha-seilu, domim, kulan, told us makom ha-patish. Rambam in Perush Mishnah says that Shovet umedakte, makom ha-patish. They're not me. End of the malacha. In other words, not only is Makom Patish different, Makom Patish, even in its tachlis, is more of an open book. But for the same reason, we might also then say that we should be stricter about overlapping. Because we might say as follows. Why is Makom Patish chayiv? Because basically what you're doing is a malacha without a name. You're doing something which we know, or the Chachamim understood, was a violation of Chilul Shabbos, according to the concept of losasa kol malacha. However, it doesn't have a label. So it doesn't have a label, but it qualifies as a malacha, as Chilul Shabbos, what do we call it? Makom HaPatish. But if that's the case, we should never overlap Makom HaPatish. Because every time you have a label, you don't need Makom HaPatish. Makom HaPatish is there to fill in a blank. You're doing something which is obvious, like that line of Tosas Rid, or like the Ramban, albeit it's not clear that they're talking about Chiyuv Chatos and Skila. But the point is, Makom HaPatish is a way of expanding Malacha, that there shouldn't be anything that falls through the cracks, with certain guidelines. So what is the violation? Losasa kol malacha. There's losasa zareya, losasa koresh, losasa kota, losasa ma'amr, losasa kosev, and so on. And then the last of them is losasa kol malacha. That's makom ha'patish, according to certain guidelines and rules. But if it's already ma'amer, for gozes, for boneh, if it's hishlim osachas is kosev, then we don't need it to be makom ha'patish. So dafka, in that case, we won't say overlapping. That's interesting. In the Rambam, the issue of overlapping is, finish up in one more minute, the issue of overlapping is unclear. In Perek Yud Halacha Tezayin, the Rambam says that Amakim Bepatish Hakla Achas Chayiv, the Kol Osa Davashu Gemar Malacha, Reza told us Amakim Bepatish V'Chayiv, Ketzad, and he has... Hamanafech b'kli zchuchis, when you blow out the glass, hatzark b'kli tzura, afilu mitzas hatzura, hamagarid kol shehu, osanekev kol shehu. He has a whole list of makom ha'patish, including making the hole in the lul, and hamanafech b'kli zchuchis, which the Gemara said it was a debate, what exactly it is. Earlier in Halacha Yedalid, however, the Rambam says, ha'osanekev kol shehu b'lul sotarnagolim, k'deshi kanes lahem ora, so he makes a hole to let light in or the smell out of the chicken coop. Chayv mishum boneh. So all the Nosa Kelim are upset. Is he paskin like Rav? Is he paskin like Shmuel? Here he paskins like Shmuel, boneh. There he paskins like Rav. And a pair of Chav Gimelok Shabbos, likewise. Here the Rav says when you make a hole in the chicken coop, you're chayv mishum makom ha'patish. Here, pair of Chav Gimel, halacha, aleph. Also nekev shu osi lahaknis lahotzi, can go nekev belul shal tarnagolim, shu osi lahaknis or lahotzi ahevel, I raise a chayv, b'shemakom ha'patish. So the Lacha Mishnah and some of the other Nosa Kelim and Minchas Chinuch suggest that really the Rambam holds that there's overlapping. Now they happen to believe this to be true in other Malachos too, Bishol and Mavir, and so on. So Stira, the Rambam in Halacha Yud Gimel is talking about boneh. The Rambam only begins his discussion of makom ha'patish in Halacha Perek Yud Halacha Tezayin. That's where he begins to speak about makom ha'patish. So there's no stira. However, there are other efforts to resolve this contradiction in the Rambam. In any case, given the Rambam's view in Pirush Mishnayos at least, which is that makom ha'patish is in the it's in the line of thinking of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, really. It's not clear that we paskin. The truth is on Daf Kuf base, There the Rambam says in Perush Mishnayot, so we don't paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel, but Makom Akornas. And Ayin Gimel, as I just read, it sounds like the Rambam does paskin that way, or at least he rehabilitates Rav Shimon Gamliel very much so. And this is true not only for the Rambam, but for Rashi. If you look at Rashi in Ayin Gimel and Aleph, Rashi says that, what is Makom Apatish of the Mishnah? Rashi says, Makab Patish, who Gemar Kol Malacha, Shekain Uman Makab Akurnas Al Asadin Lachliko Begemar Malacha, which is a quotation of Rav Shimon Gamliel. If you look at the Ramban on the spot, Ramban says that Rashi is wrong. Well, it also doesn't like Rashi. Ramban says it can't be. Ayin Gimel Amal. Says here, second. Pirush Rashi, Gemar Malacha Shekena Uman Makal Asadim B'Shaz Gemar Malacha. Be'eni Odeh, Tam Laza, She'enzu Gemar Malacha. Ramban says that's not Gemar Malacha. Ela Imun Yadav Shel Uman Hu. It's interesting. Not only does the Ramban not like Rashi, but he's basically arguing that Rav Shimon Gamliel, in the end of the day, is Ma'amen Yadav. This is very important for what we were discussing before. Even the Maskana. It's a different, it's a more specific, more detailed form of Ma'amen Yadav, training. Ukai gabna lav malachahi, kadisa behedrib, praish perakabona, ela maka the patish, hainu sha'uman maka the patish alakli, lahashwas akmi muso, it's the final straightening out of the kli. V'chein ala evan shebevinyin lahashvosa lachavruseha, hainu gemar malacha, v'chein pirusha benachanano. My time is basically up. There are several other interesting discussions of Makom HaPatish which may be related. Is there Makom HaPatish b'Ochlim? Is there Makom HaPatish b'Mitzvos? They may be separate issues, or they may be related to what we've been discussing. But to sum up, what it basically emerges is the following. We have a range of views in terms of how to define Makom HaPatish. On one extreme, we might say that Makom HaPatish is a routine malacha like any other. The only thing is, it's just a little bit more general. Basically, it's Gemar Malacha. It may even be limited to the final stage or the after stage of Boneh. Even if it isn't limited to the after stage of Boneh, maybe it's the after stage of any Malacha. Maybe it becomes a Tzura by virtue of its Tachlis, and it's a routine Malacha in every way, and all the rules then should apply as they do in any other Malacha. Toldos are the same in either direction. Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is the same. Overlapping rules are the same, and so on and so forth. Except for the ones that are technically connected to what is the Gemar as opposed to the middle or the beginning of a Malacha. That's one perspective, the Urayim, or even beyond that, if we take the Gemar as Gemar Malacha, as is. On the other extreme, we might say that Makom HaPatish is Maisa Chashuva Shalagavra, with some built-in limits, maybe Gemar Malacha, maybe the fact that it's mahane or miyape, an existing malacha, something to anchor it so that it's not just, you know, completely general. But basically, according to that perspective, it's basically a losasa kol malacha, catch-all malacha. And that might very much affect malacha shein tzricha l'gufa, the overlapping issue, the toldos question, as well as several other issues as well. Even if we don't go that far, it's quite possible that we could say that Makom HaPatish is tachlis hamalacha b'li tzuras hamalacha, and it never really has a tzuras hamalacha. The tzura is always beside the point. Even if you were to take that approach, that still might affect at least the issues of malacha shein tzricha l'gufa and toldos. It's questionable whether it will be better or worse in terms of the overlapping question, but in any case, that also might explain some of the unique features of Makom HaPatish.